This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Seeking to Excel in Service. Our speaker, Howard Bean, has been spent over 40 years in teaching. The last 35 of those have been spent at Fairhaven Christian School. Before that, he taught at a public school system. He is currently teaching 28 students from grade 7 to 10. Howard, can you come up here and I'll pray for you before you begin? Father, I ask that you'd be here with us this afternoon, be with Howard as he speaks to us, give him insight, inspiration. And I pray that his words wouldn't go unheeded or and that it would really make a change in those of us who hear it, that we could apply it to our daily life. Pray your blessing on him again. In Jesus' name, amen.
Well, good afternoon. This is called Seeking to Excel in Service. If you didn't intend to be here and you are here, you may honorably leave and go someplace else where you want to be. My name is Howard Bean. My parents named me Howard, although when I get to a place like this, I'm frequently called Harold, but my name is Howard. And I'm sort of glad it is Howard rather than Harold, because I think my nickname would be Harry, and I think Harry Bean sounds sort of weird. Not exactly true either. Well, the title is derived from 1 Corinthians 14:12, a reference that I forgot to put on the handout. Seek that ye may excel to the edifying of the church. That's 1 Corinthians 14:12, in the context of seeking the perhaps the more spectacular gifts. By the way, Excel is not a computer program as far as I'm concerned, but as far as this topic is concerned. What does excelling in service to the Lord for the edifying of the church look like? I'd like to show you some examples over the centuries, taking you first of all to the Roman Empire back in the 3rd century, when there was a devastating plague and people were dying like flies. And the Christians noticed, of course, that people were dying. Some of them were dying as well. But the thing that was different about the Christians was that they went and cared for those that had the plague, those that had this very contagious disease. And they bathed the people that were sick, and they fed them, and they looked after them at the risk of their own lives. At the same time, the Romans, who were not Christians, were tossing family members out into the street because they were afraid of getting that same contagious plague. Through this, Christians developed a very good reputation, and historian Rodney Stark believes that the care offered by the Christians may have cut the mortality rate by 2/3, at least in the Alexandria area in Egypt, and led to a large number of conversions. And that, of course, built the church. Go with me another 100 years or so to the Black Sea. A man there by the name of Phocas, who was a Christian, and he was a well-known Christian because he lived right by the main highway into the city. And he had a garden, and he offered people that they could come into the garden, rest, and then go about their business in the city the next day or later on that day. And so as he talked with them and showed them his garden and let them rest, he communicated to them his faith in Christ and gave them biblical truth. And through that, many became Christians. Well, Diocletian, the Roman emperor, decided that all Christians should be put to death. And so he sent out two of his officers to execute him. The two officers came to Phocas's place. Phocas met them, invited them into his garden, inquired as to what they had come to this city for. They said, well, we're here on orders from the emperor. There's a man here, a Christian man by the name of Phocas, and we're here to execute him. Oh, he said, come on in and enjoy my garden. And he said, I know the man well. I can direct you to him tomorrow morning. So they rested that evening. And during the night, Phocas dug a grave in his garden. And then when the officers woke up, he identified himself as Phocas and said, "I'm the man you are to execute." And they said, "We can't execute you. You've been so kind and hospitable to us." He said, "I'm ready to die. I'm a Christian." They knew that. At least they knew that he was a believer of some sort. And they said, "Well, we cannot do this." He said, "You're on orders. I'm ready to die. Carry out your business." And so they did, and they lowered him gently into his grave. Another 1,000 years or so, a man called Pilgrim Marpeck. Any of you know anything about Pilgrim Marpeck? That you could speak up and tell me something? That name ring a bell at all? Not that I know of. At least he didn't, but that's a good try. He was a Christian. And he would have been persecuted, but he had a very excellent skill. He lived in Strasbourg, Germany, on the French border, and also Augsburg. Anyway, he was a civil engineer, and he developed a waterway to bring logs and water down from the higher elevations. And even though he was an Anabaptist bishop for 25 years, he was sort of in southern Europe, in Switzerland, what Menno Simons was in northern Europe, as far as a leader is concerned. He baptized, he witnessed, he wrote about 800 pages of a Testament explanation. He differentiated between the Old Testament and the New Testament, so he was an Anabaptist in that sense. Anyway, they wanted to kill him. They would have killed him except that he had this skill that was so useful. He excelled in service to the community. And so even though his life was in danger for many years, he died a natural death, even as Menno Simons did in the north. And I have a friend who visited Europe, and in this area, they talked about the pilgrim logs, and still in the last century at least, they referred back to this Mennonite preacher by way of the logs that he had facilitated. He had facilitated the way for them to be floated down to the lumber mills. Now to more recent times in China. I think about this story various times when I'm looking for volunteers. There was an American preacher who went to visit China, got acquainted with the underground church, and the preacher there was explaining how they are threatened. They put their lives at risk by meeting together. But it's important to meet together, and so they cannot communicate lest their messages be intercepted. And so they have a believer located on the corner of a certain street, and then people come and find out where the next meeting is going to be, and then they have a worship service and instruction, of course. And so the thing is, this person that stands in the street corner doesn't last too long until he's arrested, loses his job, loses his house, is in prison, his family suffers. "Oh," the American said, "I imagine you have a hard time finding a volunteer to be that person that stands on the street corner." And the Chinese leader said, "No, we have a waiting list." Excelling in service for the edifying of the church. And I could refer to people in the last 365 days who have expended themselves greatly in Christian service for the edifying of the church. Coming to your outline now, your handout, seeking to excel in service. What does excelling in service mean in a non-religious sense? Well, earlier this week I gave blood at a blood donor clinic. The person that injected the needle into my vein, had experience. She did an excellent job. I was glad for that. My wife, a couple years ago, had cancer, and she had surgery, and the surgeon was excelling in service. He did a good job. Not like she'd worked at the hospital for a while, and there was one doctor there that, well, he got the name of Dr. Hack and Slash. And he said to my wife one day, you know, this matter of heart transplant, nothing to it really, just a matter of plumbing. Just attach things the proper way. Or an airplane pilot, this was a confession here as a Canadian, this was somebody flying from Canada to Cancun, and his trial was just a couple days ago. I was reading about it in the newspaper. Anyway, he had a cold, like I did, but his treatment was different. He drank vodka and took a Tylenol and went to bed intending to call in sick the next morning that he could not fly the airplane, but he still was sick, so he took some more vodka and went to the airport, got lost going through security, was there late, had his wings upside down, whatever that means, as a pilot, and could hardly stand up straight. I would not want to have been on that plane, and actually they escorted him off the plane as well. We want excellence in service areas like that. Well, looking at the biblical basis of seeking to excel in service, Matthew 22:37, Jesus said unto them, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. So, loving the Lord with everything has to do with excelling, doing our best. Ecclesiastes 9:10. If you know what this verse says after I say the first words, I'd like you to tell one of your neighbors the conclusion. So here's the first three words. Whatsoever thy hand... Yeah, that's good. Colossians 3:23. Whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men. And Romans 12:11 says, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. So, the Lord desires us to excel in service for the edifying of the church. A few Bible examples. I thought of Apollos. He's written about in Acts 18:25. Says there that he was an eloquent man, mighty in the scriptures. He was fervent in the spirit. He taught diligently the things that he understood. And Aquila and Priscilla took him aside and said, there's some things that you ought to know. Jesus died and rose again. A second one there from Luke 8:39 concerning the demoniac. He wanted to stick around Jesus. Jesus said, return to thine own house and show how great things God hath done unto thee. He went his way and published throughout the whole city how great things Jesus had done for him. He did a good job. And then in Acts 9:20-22, the man called Saul, after his conversion, he straightway preached Christ in the synagogues, that he is the Son of God. And that created quite a stir. They were all amazed, saying, isn't this the same man that's been killing, slaughtering the Christians? But Saul increased the more in strength and proved that Christ is indeed the anointed one of God. A few examples of complacency in the Bible. In Malachi's day, there were those who offered substandard service, giving inadequate sacrifices and having the wrong attitude. In Nehemiah's day, Nehemiah 3:5, the nobles, there were some of the nobles, I think from Tekoa, that put not their necks to the work of the Lord. They didn't put their shoulder to the wheel, we would say today. They were the slackers. They were rebuked. And in the Jeremiah 48:10, in the Amplified Version, it said, cursed be he who does the work of the Lord negligently. So that's the opposite of excelling in service. Cursed be he who does the work of the Lord negligently. A few cautions. Keep things in balance. I remember telling my daughter, Karen, she wanted to do well in school. I said, well, just do your best. You know, she was had a big exam coming up. She became a nurse practitioner and then went to El Salvador in mission work, and now is in Guatemala City area. And so she was working and working and working, and I said, just do your best. Well, she said, Dad, if I do my best, that means I have to do it to the nth degree. I just meant in a certain amount of time, do your best, you know, and then and leave it. Don't fret about it further. So keep things in balance. Another caution, don't let perfectionistic tendencies cripple you. Some of us have some tendencies to perfectionism, and that can hinder. I mean, the goal is to serve the Lord, to do a good job, an excellent job, but don't be so concerned about getting it just right to the nth degree. And another caution, don't lift yourself up with pride and put others down as you seek to excel in service. Now, how can we develop this excelling in service? In the secular world, a basketball player will shoot basket after basket, dribble the ball for miles, review passing strategies. The fellow that had the Guinness Book of Records for skipping rope, 13,000 skips in an hour. I'm not going to try that. But he didn't try it the first day either. He practiced a lot. If you're going to sing in a chorus, it's going to take lots of practice. Playing a violin, playing a piano. Now, when I went to high school, I went to a public school, and I tried to play the trumpet. And I tried practicing it in the house. We lived on a dairy farm, and they sent me down to the barn where the rest of the horns were, I guess. Excellence in the secular world. How can we develop it as Christians? Number one, see its importance. That is true in all areas of life. But it's not only important in secular activities, but we want to be approved unto God, that which edifies the church. Second thing, observe a mentor. This is true in mission work. So some young people go to a mission field and they shadow somebody that is working in a clinic or in a school or doing personal work. In a classroom, good idea to have a mentor and to visit a classroom and to be with an experienced teacher. Faith Builders is good at equipping people using mentors. I think this is something's lacking in our Sunday school teaching program, the development of teachers in Sunday school, at least in my local congregation. We're thinking about doing some things a little differently, but often, you know, you're assigned to teach a primary class, and you've never taught a primary class before, you've never taught a class before, and here's the new Sunday school year, and you go and teach. It's a lot better, I think, if you realize that that's going to be happening, if you can sit in the class with an experienced teacher, first of all. And observe how a good usher operates. I went with an older man oftentimes in a local town in witnessing. And newly ordained people, I think, should have the privilege of working alongside experienced ministers. Thirdly, engage in adequate practice. And in the January issue of Calvary Messenger, the editor there, or the writer, Gideon Yutzi, refers to Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, in which he proposes that it takes 10,000 hours to achieve mastery. Now he says perfectionists shouldn't be read that book, but anyhow, 10,000 hours to achieve mastery. And he said, well, maybe that's overdoing it a bit. How about 20 hours to memorize the Sermon on the Mount or learn a new skill? Fourth, be persistent and disciplined. Trying to sing better, trying to teach better, Arnold Palmer. He was, a golfer here in the States who won a lot of championships. He said, "The more I practice, the luckier I get." And disciplined. So someone like Audubon, of Audubon bird book fame, Robert Lee, tells about him and his study of birds. During one summer, he went day after day to the bayous near New Orleans to observe a shy waterfowl. He would have to stand almost to his neck in the nearly stagnant water, scarcely breathing, while countless poisonous moccasin snakes swam past his face and great alligators passed and repassed his silent watch. "What is his attitude?" He said, "It was not pleasant, but what of that? I have the picture of the bird." He was excelling in his particular field. Now, some people excel in video games, evidently. I was reading some statistics recently that 34 million Americans play video games an average of 22 hours a week. The average young American today will have spent as many hours, about 10,000 hours, playing video games by age 21 as he has spent in classrooms. I don't get it. Then again, I'm in my 60s, and I've never played a video game in my life. So, but I guess some of them are pretty good with that amount of practice. Apostle Paul said, "I keep my body under." Fifth, avoid attitudes that militate against excellence. Things that would keep us from excellence in service. And here I'd like to have you find a partner in your area where you're sitting. One or two others, at least one other person. And just talk to them about what is something or some things that would work against excellence. What would be an attitude that would prevent a person from becoming really good at serving the Lord and serving the church? So, question is, what are some attitudes that would work against, militate against, getting better, doing really well in serving the Lord? Go ahead and talk to each other now. All right, thank you very much. Sounds like you were excelling in talking anyway. In the sixth point on the reverse side of your handout, prepare for service by following the example of Bible young people. Increase extensively in life like Jesus. Now, I don't know what word to use. I thought of holistically, but that has some negative connotations. But I'm thinking about being comprehensive in your development like Jesus, who increased in wisdom, stature, favor with God and man. So he increased mentally in wisdom, stature physically, favor with God spiritually, and favor with man socially. So mentally, physically, spiritually, and socially. B, develop good habits like Daniel. He purposed in his heart. He was a good steward of his body. Didn't drink alcohol. Learned how to pray, knew what he believed in, resisted peer pressure. C, wait on the Lord like Joseph. You know, he had this dream, literally, as a young person, and he waited, a couple decades until the fruition of that. D, see the value of unspectacular service, like Naaman's wife's servant girl. You know, Naaman, he wanted a big show, but the little servant girl was most effective. What is the most difficult instrument to play in a symphony? An orchestra director was asked. He said, "Second fiddle." I can always get lots of first violinists, but to play second fiddle with enthusiasm, that's a problem. If you don't have a second fiddle, you don't have harmony. So, invite others to Sunday school. Clean the church house. Be friendly. Help the elderly. See the value of unspectacular service. E, be a supporter of the local congregation like Timothy. Acts 16:2 says he was well reported of by the brethren. I don't think he got that reputation by being a show-off, or by laying rubber on the road, or by listening to inappropriate music, or to be a fence rider. Fifth, or F, make a comeback like John Mark. He quit, he went not with them to the work on the first missionary journey, but then later on he was profitable to the ministry. The Apostle Paul said he wanted him to come. G, learned to be a successful failure, like Peter. Peter denied the Lord. How was he a successful failure? He was sorry for his sin. He went and wept bitterly. He learned the value of confidence in the Lord rather than in himself. He saw the danger of overconfidence. He didn't give up like Judas did, who went and hanged himself after his failure. And he didn't excuse himself or blame others. And then he accepted correction of the Lord, as he said, by the seashore, lovest thou me, three different times. Now, there's a relationship to excelling, to the edifying of the church, which of course is corporate, a relationship to teamwork. And 2 Corinthians chapter 6 has some favorite thoughts for me about workers together with the Lord and with others. We then, as workers together with him, beseech you also that ye receive not the grace of God in vain. Workers together with him, giving no offense in anything, that the ministry, the service to the Lord, be not blamed. So what are some things here that relate to teamwork and service? The first one that I think of is the need for unselfishness. So in something like basketball, teamwork is important. Passing the ball, seeing who's in the clear, and that sort of thing. And in hockey, I've seen players in my school where I teach stick handle, trying all the way down the rink instead of remembering to pass. In terms of Bible teams, there were some pretty good teams, I think, in service for the Lord. Do any two people pop into your mind that you could mention now to us that had one person help another, or they formed a team that was effective in the Lord's service? Any people that you think of? Mm-hmm. Husband and wife team, very good. Yes. Was that better than Paul and Barnabas? I don't know. Yeah, it was by the second missionary journey.
David.
Yeah. And the holding up of the Moses hands, that sort of thing. Second thing, the importance of communication. You know, two baseball players going for a fly, I've got it, or maybe they don't say I've got it, and they crash and the ball drops. In football communication, you got to understand terminology. Here's a little clipping that I have. Maybe not the best theology, but anyway, some hot comments about congregational life. Blocking, that's talking endlessly to the pastor at the church door and keeping everyone else from exiting. Draft choice, the decision to sit close to an air conditioning vent. Extra point, what you receive when you tell the preacher his sermon was too short. Face mask, smiling and saying everything is fine when it isn't. Fullback, what the choir sees when the sermon is delivered. Halfback, what the organist sees. Illegal use of hands, clapping at an inappropriate point in the service. Illegal motion, leaving before the benediction. In the pocket, where some church members keep God's tithe. Incomplete pass, a dropped offering plate. Interference, talking during the sermon. Quarterback, what tightwads want after putting 50 cents in the offering. This one makes more of a relationship to some of our church services. Running backs, those who make repeated trips to the restroom. Anyway, good communication. Listening with the heart as well as with the ears. And I find something very helpful if I'm listening particularly to in a situation where it's a little dicey and I'm not sure what's going to happen. If I hear what the person says and then I try to say it in my own words but giving the same thought. So you're saying this, that gives them a chance to say, no, I don't mean that, I mean this. And so it helps to clarify and also communicates to the other person that, yes, you have understood. And thirdly, then, the benefit of accountability. Accountability. There's actually more accountability in some sports teams than there is in some churches as far as behavior. Well, Paul confronted Peter, Samuel confronted Saul, and King Uzziah was confronted by the priest who said, Uzziah, you're not doing the right thing. You're not serving the Lord in the way you should be. Now then, for some practical applications here and some ideas about serving the Lord and seeking to excel in those areas. Oh, by the way, on the point of communication, I think this was in the States. I don't think it happened in Canada, this particular incident, but a judge noticed that off on the side there was some problem with the windows in her courtroom. So she slipped a little note to the court clerk that said, blind on the right side, maybe falling, please call someone. So she dialed 911. And a stretcher-toting squad of paramedics quickly arrived. And the judge said, oh, sorry, I wanted someone from maintenance. So it is important to communicate clearly. Well, the first area I'd like to talk about here is encouragement. Encouragement has always been important, but as Christ's return gets closer, it's even more important. As Hebrews 10:25 says, exhorting or encouraging one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. So how can we encourage? Sometimes it's just a listening ear, a smiling face, a pat on the back. What's it said? A pat on the back, although only a few vertebrae removed from a kick in the pants, is miles ahead in terms of effectiveness. So give a pat on the back. I praise God for friends who excel at encouragement. Second area is song leading. Yes, I'm trying to get my pitch pipe out of here, which reminds me of a song leader I saw earlier this year. He went to blow the pitch, reached in his pocket, realized that it was down in here someplace. He had a hole in his pocket. And so I fortunately had my little cookie in my pocket so I could blow. But this is a useful device in song leading. I don't do a lot of song leading. I'm not that great of a singer. But I do appreciate the song leaders that do a good job in serving the congregation in leading singing. So here are a few pointers for song leaders. Consider prayerfully the choice of songs in worship. Say the number clearly and with suitable volume. That's one of my pet peeves when a song leader mumbles or says it softly and I don't know what number it is, so I have trouble starting with the first words of the song. I think it's good to try to keep the congregation together without drawing a lot of attention to the maneuvers that would simply draw attention to himself or primarily do that. It's okay to make comments about the song, but the song leader's job, I don't think, is to give a little sermonette prior to each song. I think that was a preacher that said amen to that. He should attempt to have the congregation start with him on each verse, giving at least enough of a pause for me to catch my breath before I launch in on the next verse. Yes, and the pitch pipe, wonderful device for keeping the sopranos out of the rafters and the basses out of the cellar. Teaching Sunday school. How many Sunday school teachers do we have here presently? Raise your hand. How many think you may be teaching Sunday school sometime in the future? How many of you have already sat in a Sunday school class and had some ideas about how it could have been done differently or how it was done well? Well, I'd like to give you a few moments here just to talk to one of your neighbors about some ideas about what to do or not to do when teaching Sunday school. So what are some do's or don'ts for teaching Sunday school? Go ahead and talk to each other. All right, thank you very much. One of the things my wife says is, don't ask baby questions of adults. Who was the first woman to live on the earth? Well, you know, you feel dumb saying Adam, but even dumber saying, well, no, anyway, feel dumb saying Eve, but yeah. Adam would be a little worse. Anyhow, good idea for our Sunday school teachers then to express appreciation for those who do contribute ideas and questions. So thank you for your participation in that. Committee work is another thing. Here's a few things about committees in some people's opinions. There are more than 100,000 useless words in the English language, and at some committee meetings you hear nearly all of them. If Moses had been a committee, the Israelites would still be in Egypt. Perpetual motion can be found in any committee meeting. Sign on a church bulletin board, for God so loved the world that he didn't send a committee. A committee is a group of the unfit appointed by the unwilling to do the unnecessary. Well, I have different opinions about committees than that, actually. And here are 10 commandments that I present to you for committees. Many of you will work on a committee of some sort in your life. 10 commandments for committees. Number 1, thou shalt put the interest of the church, the school, and the people served by the committee in front of thine own interests and personal goals. Thou shalt not make unto thee excuses and alibis for failing to do thy fair share of the work. Thou shalt not make promises in vain by agreeing to contact a person or carry out some other task and then forgetting or neglecting to do it. 4, remember to conclude committee meetings before it gets too late. Not much of worth is accomplished after 11 p.m. That's my opinion. Honor thy fellow committee members by being an encourager, by expressing appreciation for clear and innovative ideas, by being more positive than negative in outlook, by listening attentively and thoughtfully to the ideas of others. Thou shalt not kill interest and enthusiasm by looking apathetic and listless. If thou dost not feel alert and alive, try to look alert anyway. I confess, I have gotten very drowsy in some committee meetings, so I'm speaking to myself. Thou shalt keep minutes, but not waste hours. Keep on target and avoid irrelevant bunny trails. Thou shalt not steal time from thy fellow committee members by being late for meetings. Thou shalt not shirk responsibility nor unload thy work onto someone else. And the 10th, thou shalt expect some give and take. Work to arrive at a consensus. Be cooperative. Remember that cooperation is spelled with 2 letters. What are they? W-E. We. Singing for the elderly, I asked my wife. We, as a family and as a church, have often sung for elderly people. She says, smile, look enthused. That was one of the things when our family would sing in jails. In prison, they'd notice the happy smiles on our children. Some of our children just have a natural smiley face, I guess, and looked enthused. Sing familiar songs, she says. Shake hands with people, visit with them, be friendly, and take your children along if you have children or if you can get some nephews and nieces together. Older people just love relating to children. And the last thing here is ushering that I'd like to talk about. An usher should welcome people in a friendly way and speak politely to them. Try to put visitors at ease. Help visitors to find a suitable place to sit. I asked an experienced usher for some important pointers for ushers, and he said, "The usher's job is to make people feel welcome and at ease. It's hard to do this without wearing a smile. If you're happy, don't forget to tell your face so. Make the first move toward visitors. Provide a lesson quarterly for them if you're having Sunday school. Also, as an usher, you should arrive in plenty of time to make sure everything is prepared." My home congregation at Grace, we are blessed with an excellent, efficient, servant-hearted usher. Before feeding of the 5,000, Jesus asked his usher assistants to seat the people in an orderly way. And so his assistants today can help folks be seated in an orderly way before the bread is broken. And a glass of water is a very nice thing at the pulpit for a speaker. And an usher should try to be seated where he can see the latecomers who need to be seated. Many areas of service. Seek to excel in service. Whatever your opportunities to edify the church may be, seek to excel, because no work for the Lord is too trifling to be well done. Is that about my time? All right, thank you very much for your interest and participation.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.